When last have you guys watched one of these illusionists, you know? You remember David Copperfield? Anybody? Like, well, I'm not going to admit that. That was a long time ago. I remember when he made the airplane disappear. Woo, unbelievable. So I'm watching this guy on the television, and it was just kind of interesting to see again. So this guy is, I think he's in Vegas. He walks onto the street in Vegas, and there's this guy pushing a trash can, one of those trash cans on wheels, you know? He's pushing a trash can, and he's in a janitorial outfit, and this guy walks up to him and says, "Hey, can I borrow your trash can for a second?" So he's like, okay. So they wrap the trash bag up and pull the trash bag up and set it aside, and they put a new thing in, and he says, "Okay, here's what I want you to do." And he has one of those little walkie-talkie radios, and he hands one to the janitor guy, and then he says, "What I want you guys to do is I want you to cover me with a trash can, okay?" So he's on the sidewalk in Vegas. I mean, you see the building right there. And they take the trash can, they put it over his head, and they start going on. He's talking on the little, you know, walkie-talkie. He's like, "All right, I'm good. And you see him go down like this, and then the trash can gets to here. The camera kind of pans down, follows his legs down. And the second the trash can touches the sidewalk, right, he's talking. You see his feet, and nothing's moving. Trash can touches the sidewalk, and he goes, "All right, you can lift the trash can now." And they lift the trash can up, and he's gone, okay? And he goes, "Hey, look up here." And we all look up, and he's standing on top of a building, okay? I mean, not like 20, 30 stories up, like 10 stories up where you can see him plain and clear. And he's like, "Right up here." And you're just like, "Oh, no, no." I mean, the disappearing thing, that's weird on a sidewalk. But I looked at my mom, and I'm like, the problem isn't that he disappeared. The problem is a human being can't run from there to the top of a building in that short of a time. I mean, even if it was like one of those magical trapdoor things that rocketed him up, he would shoot out of the top of the building and be like, "I'm up here." I mean, it just doesn't work. The science doesn't make any sense. Have you ever felt that way when you're watching these guys? This guy, actually, I watched him in the same deal. You know these exit doors we have over here? He actually climbed through an exit door, okay? But I mean, I'm talking about he stuck his leg through the metal, and just his leg is out, right? And then his hand comes through the door, all behind newspaper and stuff. But you see it all, and then he crawls through the door right after a bunch of people that he picked off the street bang on the door. Like, okay, that is wrong, man. So what are you doing right now? The same thing I'm doing, right? The same thing any of us do when we see that. You're wondering how he did it. Because you know it's an illusion, right? I mean, you and I both know it is an illusion. Why do we know that? Because we live under a certain set of rules, a certain set of boundaries, a certain set of things we cannot get out of. A human being cannot beam themselves to the top of a building. It doesn't happen that way. Gravity pulls us down, not up, right? So we know that. There's a rule. And our physical bodies, if I picked any one of you right now and I said to you, "I want you to run as fast as you can at the wall and don't stop. I want you to go through it." There's probably five of us in the room that could make it halfway through the wall, right? But it wouldn't be pretty, okay? The rest of us will bounce off the wall. Why? Because that's a rule. Okay, when you take our physical body and put it against a wall or a door, there is a force and it stops everything. You don't walk through walls. Anybody? Anybody here walk through a wall lately? I don't think so. Okay, so we have to assume that there is an illusion going on, something that this person has done to these things that allow him to break the rules because the rules don't apply anymore because he's changed something. The door isn't real, or the trash can. I don't know what, but certainly I beamed to the roof is not an option, okay? Not an option. Thank you for sharing. I don't think so. I just want to know how you did the trick. Today we step into the beginning of the Christmas story, right? We start the Christmas season. We start the journey into that story we all know well, or at least most of us do. We kind of get where we're going. We kind of know the end already. And so we're traveling into that again. But in order to travel into that story and understand that story, we have to do something today that sort of breaks beyond what we know to be completely normal, okay? If you talk Christmas and you talk the Christmas story and you say, folks, we're going to begin at the beginning of the Christmas story, where does the Christmas story usually begin? It begins in the book of Matthew. It begins in the book of Luke. It begins with a genealogy. It begins with the birth of a child. And then you got shepherds and you got, you know, wise men and you got Mary and you got stuff going on. And that's the beginning of the story. But today, we're going to take that story and we're going to say, before we step into that story, that chapter, that part of it, we need to take a step back in the story to a larger story, because if we don't understand the context of the Christmas story, we cannot and will not understand the reality and clarity of our rescue, which is what this Christmas story is all about, the rescue of us, of humanity. And so in order to see that, we have to step back. And we have to step back far enough that we step beyond the rules, beyond the boundaries, beyond time and beyond space. We have to step outside of this world in which we function and in which we exist, through which we see everything and by which we evaluate everything. We have to go beyond that. We have to go to the very beginning, the very beginning. And where is the very beginning of our story? It's not in Matthew. It's not in Luke. Where is it? Genesis. You would think it's in Genesis, because that would make sense, because how does Genesis begin? Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning. So there you have. That's it. That's the beginning. And that is the beginning of our story. It is the beginning of our part in the story. God in Genesis chapter 1 verse 1 says, in the beginning I created the heavens and the earth. And he begins there and he says, your story, people, began when I created time and space and I created the worlds and the universe and the planet in the beginning. But the beginning of the story actually goes beyond that, because that story, our story, still fits within a context that is larger. In John chapter 1, verse 1, we find these three words starting John chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning. And the story really begins there, because it is a story we get a glimpse of. We don't get a lot of detail. We don't get a lot of information, because it's not our story. We don't need a lot of detail. All God is doing is saying, just so you know, your big story, in which the Christmas story fits into a larger story that is not yours, but it's there. That's all God needs us to know, because the details will play into our story. But he starts in John chapter 1, verse 1, and he says, in the beginning was the Word. What an odd thing to say. I mean, we Christians, you know, we read stuff like that like it's normal these days. In the beginning was the Word. Anybody feel normal about that? What the heck is the Word? What Word in the beginning? I mean, was there a Bible floating? In the beginning was the Word. I mean, you know, we gotta start getting real with each other every now and then and go, it is weird to read a sentence that says, in the beginning was the Word. So let's go there. John chapter 1, verse 1, page 758 of our Bibles, which are under the seats if you didn't bring a Bible of your own. Page 758, John chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning was the Word. What is the Word? Why is it the Word? What's going on with the Word? So we read on, and this is what it says. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Okay, back to weirdness, okay? I mean, does this sentence make any sense to any of you? Let's not pretend. Let's not go, oh, that's perfect. I memorized that in Sunday school. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. How on earth can you be with something and be something simultaneously? Have you ever heard of anything stranger than that? It was with him. It was him. Was it with him? Was it him? I don't know. See, we are beginning to step into a world here where we have to recognize that we are stepping out of the boundaries in which we function, in the world in which we feel familiar, in the things which we can tangibly experience and touch. It begins right off the bat with these statements that can't and don't make any sense within the limitations and boundaries in which we know we exist. So we are stepping into what we would term mystery to a certain extent.
But you see, what we don't know yet is that what God is doing here, in the very beginning, as the story starts, God is already revealing about himself some critical things that will play deeply into the purposes to which he is going to begin our story, and ultimately into where the Christmas story will launch. See, what we know about this as we study further is that this God we are going to get to know actually exists in his very essence, in his very identity, in ways that you and I cannot exist. See, God defines things. So we find out in Scripture as we read the larger story, God defines love. So we say God is love. God is justice. God is mercy. God is peace. God is. Why is God these things? He doesn't have these things. He defines them, and he exists as they are. God exists, and that is love. That defines love. What God does is love. And God defines something else. His character, his essence, he, in his identity, is community. He is community. That is something you and I cannot be alone, can we? Community, by definition, in our human experience, requires what? Two of us, right? When you are alone, we have a word for that. What is that word? Isolated, right? Isolation. You are alone. You are not in community. But when you are with somebody else, with God, with a person, we start saying there's now how many of you? Two, and so that's community. But we find out with God that he exists in his identity in community, which means that this sentence under those sets of rules makes perfect sense. God is saying here, I was with me and we are I. What? That's because you can't do that. Because your essence, your identity does not include community. Why am I going into all this? Because it becomes critical to what God is going to do in our story in just a few minutes. So remember what I just told you, okay? In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Whoo! Okay, here we go. Watch this. Verse 3. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. I know. It's a grammatical thing. Hang with it. It's original language stuff, okay? Here's what it basically says. Everything you touch, everything you smell, everything you see, everything you feel, everything that's tangible, everything that we can stretch into the universe and see, everything we know to be real, everything was made by this God. So in the beginning, there was God, and then God made everything that is now tangible to us. And so we find something out. Do you see what God is doing? He is saying, here's what he's saying. You ready? When you observe the trash can over me and it touches the ground and you lift it up and I'm not there, here's what happened. I beamed up to the top of the building. And we all go, no, I want to know how it actually happened. And he goes, no, it actually happened that way. I beamed up to the top of the building. And you go, no, I know there's a trick to this. There is no trick. I beamed to the top of the building, but the rules don't allow for it. I know I don't function in your rules. See, what God is saying is, I made it all. I made everything. I want you to know that. That's how it played. In fact, it clarifies for us further on. Take a look at this. In the book of Colossians, Paul's writing to the church in Colossae. In Colossians chapter 1, verse 15, he writes these words on page 843 of our Bibles. It says this: He is the image of the invisible God. It's talking about Jesus. We find out that the Word in John chapter 1 was also Jesus because it says the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. So we know now that the Word in John chapter 1 was Jesus, who was with God and was God, because they exist, he exists in community. And here we find out Jesus was the image of the invisible God. He was the tangible touch point of invisible that became visible to us. And look what it says. The firstborn of all creation. In other words, before anything was, he was there. And it says this: For by him all things were created in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities. All things were created through him and for him, and he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. Wow, lots of clues in that passage, isn't there? So God goes on. He says, okay, you want to know what happened? You want the answer to the great mystery of all time? How did all this come about? Where did it begin and what happened? Here it is. You ready? Before time began, before space, before in the beginning of your story, in the very beginning, my story was there. And I existed. We existed. I was everything. And I created everything that is in existence. And you ready for this? I created it for my purposes, because it was created, what did it just say there? For him, right? And you ready for this? And I hold, not held, I hold it all together. Which means that if this is true, when you and I breathe in and breathe out and we are alive because at this very moment, everything that is existing is held together in the glory and wonder of God. That means that when we say we are in Christ, or we are in God, or we are found in him, literally, as a created being, you cannot exist outside of God because he holds everything together. So we're standing on the edge of a mysterious and wonderful reality. God created everything. He created everything with a purpose, and he holds it all together to fulfill that purpose. To what purpose did God create everything? Well, the clue to that is found in several places, but is best articulated in the book of Romans. Paul is writing to the church in Rome, in Romans chapter 1, and he's writing in a different context than creation here. He is writing about the fact that we, the people, have missed God. And in Romans chapter 1, he writes these words that reveals to us the beauty and wonder of why God created. All of this becoming critical to the Christmas story as we recognize how it fits into our story. Watch this. In Romans chapter 1, page 804 of our Bibles, it says these words in verse 19. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. So what is the context here? What is Paul saying? That God is not invisible, he is not mysterious, he is revealed. What we need to know about God is plain as sight to us. Okay, well, how is that possible? Because we know God is invisible. Look, verse 20. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since, what? The creation of the world in the things that have been made. Why did God create? So that he would be revealed. He created to make himself known. He created so that he can be seen, known, understood. God created to reveal himself. Isn't that extraordinary? So God creates for who? For himself, so that he would be known to us now. Now that we know God was before everything, God created everything, God holds everything together, and the purpose to which he created was so that he might be known, that he might be revealed. He was expressing himself. Watch this. God now says, okay, now that you understand the big picture, let's talk details. Let's talk your story, because your story is part of what makes this reality come true. And for that, we do turn to the beginning of our story, which is in Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. And our story begins this way. In the context of everything we have now discovered, it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. So we begin in this place, that God creates the heavens, and then he creates the earth, and the earth, as he begins its creation, is void. What is the word void? Empty. It has nothing.
We find out in this story, just to add to the context, because before we jump into creation, you have got to get your filters straightened out, okay? God creates the heavens and the earth. And it says in Job, in Job chapter 38, Job's having a discussion with God, and God basically says, okay, stop for a second, I want to talk. And he says to Job, were you there when I started everything? I just want to know, were you there? I mean, you seem awfully wise. I love it. Chapter 38 of Job guarantees God has sarcasm right there. It's a good, holy kind of sarcasm, not an evil, bad kind of sarcasm, okay? But it's there. I mean, you hear it. He's like, okay, so Job, let me guess. You were born before time. He actually says it in there. You should read it. It's awesome. And one of the things he says as he's having this discussion with Job about how it all happened in the beginning and whether Job was there or not, he says this. Were you there when I laid the foundations of the earth while the stars were singing and the angels were praising? The stars here represented in the Old Testament as angels. The fallen star, the stars. He's not talking about the stars like the night sky. He's talking about angels. So he says, when I was creating the foundations of the earth, when I was creating the reality of your story, somebody was watching. They were praising and singing as they watched. Were you there? Were you there? Because they were there. Were you there? And so as we start this journey into creation, let me just set the stage properly, okay? We have a God that is creating, who was before creation. He is creating with purpose to reveal himself, and he has created for himself prior to creating our story an audience. Now, we are going to look at creation, and we're going to do what we always do, the same thing we do when we see a guy disappear from under a trash can. We are going to say, we know how the rules work, we know the boundaries, so this must function within those boundaries. So the supernatural cannot be true. But when God started this story, he started without any boundaries, without any rules, without any reason. He started exclusively in any which way he chose to start. And when he started to reveal himself. Whenever you watch someone reveal themselves, we here in our human context have a word for that. When someone takes what is inside of them and they put it outside of them and it turns into something tangible and it is a revelation of who they are, what do we call that? I'll give you a clue. It starts with an A, ends with a T, has an R in the middle of it. Art. That's right, we do. Art, we do. It's not always beautiful, but my children, they reveal themselves daily and I call it their art. You may not call it art. I do. Why? What is it? It is the revelation of their insides that I cannot see out onto paper. When you see architecture and it's art, right? What's the difference between architecture that's art and architecture that's not? I'll tell you. It's very simple. Architecture that's art is when an architect takes what they have accumulated, what they know, who they are, and they apply it to a building or a piece of structure, and they say, this is me. And we walk past those kinds of things and go, oh, wow. Isn't that beautiful? But the buildings, we just shoot up a million miles a minute. Nobody's expressing themselves there. We're just building buildings that somebody told you to build. It needs to go straight. It needs to have this many rooms. So art is when somebody expresses themselves. We see art in all sorts of forms, in architecture, in speech. We see art on paper, in sculpture. It's all this. It's when somebody is able to take something inside of them and bring it to life. And God is about to reveal himself to us. He's about to show himself to us. How do you think he's going to do that? By building a building that goes straight and has four walls and no. What God's about to do is say, okay, you want to watch me come alive in a way that you see? Watch this. And he takes exactly what every artist always takes to start with, a blank canvas, right? What does it say? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was void. It was covered in darkness. There was nothing. And God, without brushes or sponges, without hands or feet, without colors or paint, God does something unbelievable. He speaks, and these are the first words that come out of his mouth as the canvas begins. And God said, let there be light. And there was light. Can you imagine? Can you imagine watching an artist bring something void and dead and bring life to it? And he doesn't just put light in there. This is what he does. He says he takes the light and he takes the darkness and he separates them out and then he makes them function so that we see day and night emerge. So what is happening to the light and the darkness? They are alive.
They are not dead on a canvas. They are living. They are moving. They are interacting. It's incredible. I mean, that's enough. We're done. That's beautiful. If I were an angel, I'd go, that's that's awesome. And God goes, shh, not even started yet. Watch this. Watch this. And then it says, you know, it says on day two, as the first day emerges and light and darkness interact and produce time, God says on day two, this is what he did. He looks at the earth, which has now got light and darkness, but is still void of anything else, colorless in every way. And he takes it and he says, first things first, man, I'm going to take this planet and I'm going to separate the waters from the waters. It says that. And I'm going to place waters encompassing the earth and waters on the earth. And he separates it out. And we have what we lovingly call our atmosphere and that little canopy in which we function and breathe and go, oh, I'm so glad for the canopy because otherwise we'd all be dead. And he begins, and now suddenly, if you know the end of the story, you know he is in the middle of producing something, an environment, a place in which he is going to bring about the pinnacle of all that he is purposing here. So he starts shaping this, and all of the angels are watching, going, what on earth is happening here? And then he says this. He says, okay, listen, now let's start playing. And with his voice, with his speech, he says, I want the waters that are on the planet to separate out. And we're gonna, as they separate out, they're going to form these bodies of ocean and these bodies of land. And when the bodies of land are formed, here's what I want, okay? I want them to be filled with vegetation. And these are words we're using here. But can you imagine before these words existed, as God is drawing this canvas of creation outside of every rule we know, breaking every limitation we are aware of, and he's going, all right, next. And he throws onto this canvas the wonder of color and vegetation and fruit trees and flowers, all in their kinds, spreading over the land. Could you even imagine what it must have been like to watch that canvas emerge? And then as God goes, now we have water and we have land and we have sky and we have this planet and it's coming together. It's coming. It's ready. This picture, you know when you're watching an artist, all you're waiting for is the end product, right? How is it going to end? Because when it's going to be done, it's going to be beautiful. It's already cool, but it's going to be awesome. And then what happens? Day four emerges. Now think about this. We have a canvas, right? What do we have? We have light and darkness moving and living and breathing and experiencing and shaping. Inside of the light and the darkness, we have our world emerging and God shaping it and changing it and moving it. And then God goes, okay, now this canvas needs some light that is vibrant and alive. That's not just light and darkness. And so he says, he places into the universe stars. He starts with creating the wonder of millions of planets and suns and burning balls of fire that exist all over the span of this canvas. A span so large, we have yet to find its end. A span so alive that the canvas itself is expanding at an incredible rate. Everything is moving. Nothing is still. Nothing is dead. It's all there. And he spreads into it. Can you imagine standing back and watching the stars fill the canvas of the universe? And then into our story, as he's describing it to us, he places into the sky two vibrant light sources. One which reflects onto the other and brings us light during the day and light during the darkness. And so begins the rules, right? Because the vegetation without the sun, that's kind of odd. But God begins to say, oh, I'm going to put a system in place that is going to make all of this function beautifully. And then it says on day five, sun sets, moon comes up, sun comes up. And on day five, God looks at the oceans and he goes, okay, let's fill them with vibrance. Because the earth is coming together now, but it's still got some of that sense of, well, what's going to be on it? Have you ever done any scuba diving, snorkeling, anybody? How many of you guys have ever watched scuba diving or snorkeling on TV? Come on, seriously, that should be everyone. Okay, just a note. If you've never even watched someone underwater, go Google scuba diving this week and watch someone follow a fish. It's really much more wonderful than you can imagine. I love the story when these guys get these submarines. We spend years and years and years building a submarine that can withstand the depths, right? And then there's this little teeny yellow submarine, and it's going down. And there's a guy in it. And it gets to that point where it's deep enough and everything's dark, and you hear the creaking like, and the commentator's like,
What a brave man. Any second now, the submarine could implode. We don't know when it's actually going to happen. We think it might survive, but we're not sure. This is the strongest metal the Earth has, and we've built this thing so intensely, it's unbelievable that anything could ever get down this low. We are the first to arrive. And then some little blue fish with a red tail swims by. I've seen it, and it's like everyone stops in dead silence. How did that get here? And they're suddenly wondering if they're deep enough or if the creaking is real. Because, no, that can't be. It can't happen. And I love the time and time again in the fish of the sea and the birds of the sky. God creates these things that go places we cannot go, do things we cannot do, and exist in places they should not exist. And he goes, this is my power, my creativity, my sustaining wonder. Because why did God create? Why? To stick a building up in the middle of space? No. He created to reveal his invisible qualities, his power and eternality. And he reveals it in the wonder of creation. And after the birds are flying, can you imagine a canvas? Stars and suns and moons and birds and fish and stuff. And the land. The land has color, vegetation, but it's not enough. And on day six, God says, watch this. And he says, I want livestock. I want animals. I want creepy crawlies. It actually says it in the Bible, creepy crawlies or creeping things, the things that scare us all half to death. That was important. I feel like that's necessary. And God throws it in there, and the wonder of what is on our land and the life. Can you imagine this canvas couldn't be more alive, could it? I mean, everything's moving. Everything's expanding. Everything's shaping, shining, glowing, doing all sorts of incredible and wonderful things. And it is then and only then that we hear the most incredible words God could possibly speak in the creation story. I actually want to read them. In verse 26 of chapter 1 of Genesis, right after God saw that it was good, he writes this. Then God said, verse 26, let us make man in our image, after our likeness. I want that to soak in for a second. Of everything you've just heard, of everything you've just seen on the canvas, of all of the vibrance, all of the beauty, all of the color, all of the movement, all of the universe, all of the stars, all of the suns, all of the planets, all of the life in the ocean, all of the birds, all of the land, everything. God stops at the end of it and he says, now the canvas is ready to show who I am. And he creates onto the canvas us. Us. And he says, this is the representation, the full picture of my image and my likeness. He creates Adam into the picture. And we emerge in absolute perfection, in absolute wonder, glowing with the image of God. And he creates into us a gift that represents his likeness and image in an extraordinary way. He says to us, we can choose things. It's amazing. We know because the first thing he says is after he creates Adam, we find out in Genesis chapter 2, he looks and he goes, okay, something's not right. It's the first time in all of the creation story he says, this is not good. What is missing? In Adam, what is missing? A helper, right? So what does he say to Adam first? He says, why don't you go choose for yourself a helper? I don't think God was going, well, I'm sure he'll find the lion to be nice. I don't think this was God going, let's see what he comes up with and I'll see if I can make it work. God declares to us in that moment, I have created something that bears my image. And so before I just do something, I will give this creature the ability to experience the reality of choosing something. So Adam goes and he comes back and he goes, I don't like any of them. Right? Sorry, I'm going to get in trouble for that one. Adam's ticked right now. It's like, what? I didn't say it that way. So he goes, look, none of them work. And so God goes, okay, watch this. And we know the story, right? He creates for Adam a helpmate, a friend, a partner, a community. See, for the first time, Adam can experience humanity in community.
The reason that Adam was not good alone had nothing to do with Adam. He had God. I mean, people was like, well, he had God. I'm like, give me God any day of the week over a woman. Those people are complicated. God is easy. My wife isn't here today. She was at the 9 o'clock, so I could say that in the service. So here's the deal, right? Adam had God. Why would he need a woman? I'll tell you exactly. Because if we are going to represent the likeness of God, if we're going to bear his image, there is a missing piece when we are alone. Because God is more than alone. He is community. And the only way we can be community is when two of us become what? One of us. So what does God say of Adam and Eve? He says, I've made both of you and you are one. This community of humanity is my image. This community of humanity bears my likeness. And so we are set free. And we're told that Adam and Eve are placed into the most perfect environment, a garden, in the most perfect environment, the earth, in the most perfect canvas, the universe, with the most perfect God, displaying in the most perfect way the very essence, the very nature, the very wonder, the very image, the very likeness of his and her creator as a community. And that's where the story should have ended. It should have ended there. It should have stopped there. It had every reason to stop there. See, because we were created perfectly. We were created without any desire or need to run from God, any desire or need to hide. We were created without any shame, without any fear, without any deception. There was no veil between us and God. There was no faith required. There was no need to wonder. There was nothing that in any way restricted our freedom on any level. That was Adam and Eve. And we were placed into an environment that had nothing against us. We did not know the word death. We did not know the word fear. We did not know the word alone. We did not know the word shame. We knew nothing of any of that. We didn't even know deception. We only knew God, and we knew each other, and we knew perfection, and we knew wonder, and we knew truth. We knew everything we needed to have the story end there. We had the ability to choose, but our choice was obvious. Our choice was a no-brainer. Don't put our sin into Adam and Eve and say God was unfair. He put a tree and tempted them. No, he did not. They were not us. They had nothing that we find familiar. They were the opposite. They were bent toward God, born to be in community with him. And when the lies were shared with them, when the lies were told, they had every reason to walk away because there was no gray. And in that garden, if the story had ended there, as I wish it had, I would not have to share with you the story of Christmas. I would not have to enter the story of a baby born onto this planet. I would not have to use words like rescue or redemption. I would not have to use words like suffering or death or destruction. I would not have to think about words like pain, devastation, separation. All of those words did not exist and should never have existed in our story because we should have ended the story in perfect community with God in the garden. But we did not. We did not. Us human beings, in our perfection, we chose to go against everything that was obvious. And we chose to take something that was never meant to be ours. And when we took it, when we tasted of it, we experienced words that now require a Christmas story and a clarity on what rescue really looks like. This is where we must end today. The story will continue next week. But we must end in paradise. We must end in the garden. Because this week I want you to get a clear view of what should have been.
I want you to know what your soul longs after. That longing deep inside of you, that chasing after the wind, I want you to know why that is there. It is there because you and I were created for a paradise beyond our wildest imagination. We were created to find a place of peace and joy and community and perfection. We were created to represent the wonder of God. And our ability to display all of that, our ability to choose, our ability to run free, our ability to commune without trouble was robbed from us because of something we chose. But we must stand on the edge of the garden once again today. We must stare into creation beyond the rules and regulations, beyond the laws of physics and science and all that. We must stare at it and just stop for a second and say, this is what God did and this is why. And I was meant to live there. No wonder my soul longs for the things it does. No wonder I chase my idols and seek for perfection in relationship and long for friendship in deep and wonderful levels. Because I was created for that. My soul knows something is wrong. Something is missing. And we will speak next week of why and how all of that occurred. Let's pray. God, as we enter into this last week of November and prepare ourselves to step fully into the Christmas story, dealing with words like rescue and redemption, dealing with words like pain and suffering, dealing with words like death and destruction, dealing with words like new and redeemed. Remind us, God, that you created to reveal, you created to express, you created to display your invisible qualities, your power, your might, your mercy, your love, your creativity. And you made us to bear your name, to display your likeness, to live with the privileges of your freedom and your perfection, to experience perfect community with one another and perfect community with you. No veil, no deception, no gray, no fear, no anxiety, no death. God, it is no wonder we long for things that cannot be ours and things we cannot seem to reach. Show us through the Christmas story how we can once again find ourselves where we belong. We love you, Jesus. Amen.